The impact of the Great War on all the arts across the Western world cannot be overstated. In music, as in the other arts, composers reacted to the war in many and diverse ways. In this presentation, which focuses on music in Germany and France from roughly 1900 to 1920, I will explore the different currents that produced radically new music in these warring countries and illustrate how they are reflected in the response of individual composers to the experience of war. After the Great War, music reached not just a turning point, but a breaking point. The term fin de siècle for the end of the 19th century is appropriate not just as an accurate historical term, but because of its connotations for the closing of an era, for the end of something. By the early 1900s, the world had changed dramatically with advances in science, industrialization, and technology. Consider the lifetime of Camille Saint-Saëns. As Michael Steinberg writes, the dates amaze. Saint-Saëns was born in 1835, the year of Lucia di Lammermoor, I Puritani, and Schumann's Carnival. When he died in 1921, Alban Berg was about halfway through the orchestration of Wozzeck. Dickens' The Pickwick Papers and T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland were both written in his lifetime. He was born in the reign of Louis Philippe and just 6 years after George Stephenson's rocket had frightened the horses by steaming along the rails at 16 miles per hour. When he died, France was a republic. It was curtains for the Russian, Austro-Hungarian, and German empires, and Captain John Alcock and Lieutenant A.W. Brown of the Royal Flying Corps had flown from Newfoundland to Ireland in 16 hours. This striking example shows just how disruptive these advances could be. The years leading up to the war were a time of searching for new directions, expressed in movements such as Impressionism, Expressionism, and Futurism. After the war, modernism pervaded all the arts. Modernism is a multifaceted concept, but in general terms, it can be interpreted as a search for new means of artistic expression through a rejection of established norms. The sense of exploration that exemplifies modernism is common to all the countries of Europe and to all art forms. It is perhaps easiest to understand in painting, where artists turn from representation to abstraction, as we see in works by Picasso and Kandinsky. If we think of modernist visual art against the backdrop of the Great War, we become aware of its hard-edge quality, its apparent lack of emotion, and the same is true of music. Could this be a facade to hide the collective trauma of a terrible war? Let us set the musical scene. As far back as the 1860s, Wagner had begun to stretch traditional musical structure and tonality to the breaking point in works such as his opera Tristan und Isolde of 1864, and his influence spread throughout Europe. In reaction to this and to the perceived domination of the German musical tradition, nationalism became prominent. Russia being the most obvious example, as the Mighty Five, Mussorgsky, Borodin, Kui, Balakirev, and Rimsky-Korsakov strove throughout the 1860s and beyond to establish a uniquely Russian musical idiom. Anti-German sentiment became even more pervasive following Wagner's opera Die Meistersinger, which premiered in 1868. The final speech of Hans Sachs, the hero, concludes with a stirring speech on the value of German art. "Beware, evil tricks threaten us. If the German people and kingdom would one day decay under a false foreign rule, soon no prince would understand his people, and foreign mists with foreign vanities they would plant in our German land. What is German and true, none would know if it did not live in the honor of German masters. Therefore I say to you, honor your German masters, then you will conjure up good spirits, and if you favor their endeavors, even if the Holy Roman Empire should dissolve in mist, for us, they would yet remain holy German art." The response in France was that Saint-Saëns and other composers, including Lalo, Bizet, Vidor, and Franck, founded the Société Nationale de Musique Française in 1871, shortly after the conclusion of the Franco-Prussian War, with the aim of counteracting the influence of Wagner and inspiring serious music of a specifically French character. This was in part a response to German assertions that the frivolity of the French which in music translated to the overwhelming importance of opera in Parisian musical life, had brought about their downfall. And as an aside, no French composer wanted to abandon Beethoven, so he was claimed as Flemish through his Flemish grandfather. While the Paris Conservatoire provided applied musical training to a very high standard, there was at this period no required course in music history, and the repertoire taught was almost exclusively 19th century and French. So there was a real need to construct a canon and a narrative of French music comparable to the German tradition. So 40 years before the Great War, the battle lines were already set in music. In practical terms, by the first decade of the 20th century, composers in Germany and Austria were polarized. While Mahler and Strauss wrote massive symphonies and tone poems that ran to extremes of length and required huge orchestra, Arnold Schoenberg and his followers pursued Wagner's expanded tonality to its logical conclusion, the abandonment of classical harmonic theory in favor of 12-tone composition in works that were often short and compact. In both schools of musical thought, the new discipline of psychology influenced composers to abandon classical values of balance and rationality and write music that was deeply introspective and ventured into nightmare scenarios, such as Richard Strauss's opera Salome of 1905 and Schoenberg's song cycle Piero Lunaire of 1912. But the schism between these two sides was moral as well as musical. In his Theory of Harmony of 1911, Schoenberg argued that music had degenerated since the days of the great Viennese masters, Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. He described the ambivalent chromatic chords that had been common in 19th century music as effeminate, sentimental, or hermaphroditic, and constructed a case for a new purity in music that would break with a corrupted past. He and his students Alban Berg and Anton Webern became known as the Second Viennese School in recognition of their aesthetic link to Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Meanwhile, in pre-war France, Claude Debussy and his supporters, the Debussyists, emphasized that the French musical tradition and its values were based on precision, rationality, concision, simplicity, and elegance, and cited the 18th century composers François Couperin and Jean-Philippe Rameau as their models. Again, purity was important. The critic Pierre Lasserre argued that Wagner's music was irrational in its complexity and that its influence had polluted French music, another moral argument. So in both countries, the stage was set for a break with 19th century musical style. When the war broke out, it had a direct effect on many composers. Initially, there was some jubilation. In 1914, referring to French composers such as Bizet and Debussy, Schoenberg wrote in a letter to Alma Mahler, "Now we will throw these mediocre kitschmongers into slavery and teach them to venerate the German spirit." And as an aside, in the same year in Paris, Saint-Saëns called for the suppression of all German music. But Schoenberg's exaltation soon faded, and he later referred to this period as his war psychosis. He enlisted in the Austrian Army Reserve in December 1915 at age 42 and served on and off until 1917. During the war years, he virtually ceased composing. There is no one work of his that shows a direct reaction to the war, but there is a distinct change of style from the expressionism of Piero Lunaire to 12-tone composition. In a recent paper, the composer Wolfgang Andreas Schulz theorizes that in the 12-tone system, with its strict rules, Schoenberg conceived a style of music that conveys coldness, toughness, and distance, rather than sensitivity and vulnerability. Thus, the entire concept of 12-tone music could be viewed as a response to the war and a need for society to shield itself from its horrors. Schoenberg's student Alban Berg followed him on the 12-tone path. We all know about the scandalous premiere of The Rite of Spring by Stravinsky in May of 1913. What is less well known is the even more scandalous premiere of Berg's five orchestral songs in Vienna in March of the same year. fights broke out and the police were called. Like Schoenberg, Berg was called up in 1915, but his health collapsed after only a month of training, and he served the remainder of the war in an office job. He had already begun sketching notes for an opera on Georg Büchner's play Wojciech, to be called Wojciech. The demands of his wartime job did not allow much time for composition, but the scholar Patricia Hall has noted that he filled a notebook with instructions for bureaucratic military procedures, and that these are interspersed with sketches for Wojciech. While the main plot follows Büchner's story, Berg took some of the background, an obnoxious superior, the disgusting food, the incompetent army doctor, the injustice of the army system, from his own experiences in training camp. The opera is a masterpiece of 20th century music. As in Schoenberg, there is tight command of form and of 12-tone musical language, but the music remains highly expressive. The soldier Wojciech hovers between tonality and atonality, between sanity and madness, and surely when the opera was finally premiered in 1922, audiences could not have been unaware of the parallels with the experiences of soldiers in the Great War. In France, composers were also directly affected. Maurice Ravel volunteered to serve in 1915. He made several attempts to enlist as an Air Force pilot, but was refused due to health issues and ended up serving as a driver in the Transport Corps, where he undertook several dangerous missions just behind the front lines and witnessed the dreadful aftermath of the Battle of Verdun. After walking through the empty streets of a deserted town on a sunny day, he wrote, "I don't believe I will ever experience a more profound and strange emotion than this sort of mute terror." After the war, in 1919, he published Le Tombeau de Couperin. The work is ostensibly an homage, tombeau meaning monument, to the 18th century composer François Couperin, whom I cited earlier as one of the ideals in the search for a French musical identity. And each movement in this suite is modeled on an 18th century French dance form. The harmonies are tonal, with Ravel's typical lack of sentimentality, and the music is elegant and detached. But it is dedicated to friends of Ravel who were killed during the war. Each movement bears one of their names. So we can interpret it both as a nostalgic bow to beloved past French traditions, and also sadness at their loss and the loss of human life. Like Schoenberg and Berg, Ravel took refuge from horror in clarity of form and order, although in his case without forsaking tonality. Claude Debussy did not serve in the war, as he was already suffering from the rectal cancer that would take his life in 1918. However, he was deeply affected. Writing to his publisher Durand shortly after the outbreak of war about a new ballet that was to be set to his music in London, he said, "I should not like that work to be played before the fate of France has been decided, for she can neither laugh nor weep while so many of our men are heroically facing death." He found himself physically unable to compose during 1914, with the exception of one very short piece. In 1915, he was able to leave Paris for the coast, and there he wrote En Blanc et Noir, a set of three caprices for two pianos. The first is headed with a quotation from the libretto of Gounod's Romeo et Juliette. "They dance, but at home I must sit alone. This blow and this shame with bowed head I proclaim," an obvious reference to his own inability to serve in the war. The second movement is dedicated to a nephew of Debussy's publisher, who was killed in 1915, and carries an epigraph from a poem by François Villon, entitled "Ballade to the Enemies of France," and a rough translation is, "May the enemy be taken by the serfs of Aeolus to the forest where Glaucus rules, where he will be deprived of peace and hope, for he is not worthy to beat us. Who could wish evil to the realm of France?" This particular movement has been described as a musical picture of a battlefield with ominous chord progressions And then in the middle, the Lutheran chorale, "A mighty fortress is our God," is quoted as a direct reference to the enemy. So neither Ravel nor Debussy radically changed compositional style during the war. The big break with French classical tradition came in 1917 with Erik Satie's Ballet Parade. After an undistinguished studentship at the Paris Conservatoire, Satie had made a living as a conductor and pianist in the cabarets of Montmartre. In his compositions, he mixed Debussyan impressionist harmonies with music hall idioms. And after his serious music was criticized for lack of form, he achieved notoriety as early as 1903 with Trois morceaux en forme de poire, three pieces in the shape of a pair, or in the form of a pair, for two pianos. In 1916, Jean Cocteau heard him perform it and approached him about setting a ballet to his music. Satie was intrigued by the idea of writing for the theatre, but he preferred to write new music for the project. So Cocteau began writing a scenario, parade. Le Dictionnaire Larousse defines the term parade, parade, as a burlesque scene played outside a sideshow booth to entice spectators inside. Cocteau's ballet consisted of three sideshows, acrobats, a Chinese magician, and a little American girl, who are performing outside a theatre to attract an audience to the main show inside. But the audience refuses to enter the theatre because the sideshows are so entertaining. Parade was staged by the impresario Serge Diaghilev and the Ballet Russe, who had premiered The Rite of Spring. Pablo Picasso designed the sets and costumes, and the controversial writer Guillaume Apollinaire wrote the program notes, incidentally coining the term surrealism. Satie's music is a collage of everything from music hall tunes to jazz. It is by no means as dissonant as Berg's music for Wozzeck, but compared with Ravel and Debussy, it is just as demonstrative a destruction of accepted musical norms. With the plot or non-plot of Parade, Cocteau championed popular culture and later made this explicit in his pamphlet The Cock and the Harlequin of 1918. In it, he said, we need music on the earth, music for every day. I need music that I can live in like a house. This was modernism with a capital M, the rejection of everything old in the quest for new means of expression. Everything was designed to shock, and indeed it did. At the premiere, the audience was about to riot and was only silenced when Apollinaire, in uniform and still in bandages from a shrapnel wound to the head, appeared on stage and spoke to the audience. Interpreted as a reaction to war, Parade goes far beyond Schoenberg's 12-tone music and Ravel's neoclassicism. They are consciously based in the classical past, while Cocteau and Satie swept away tradition and indeed rejected high art music altogether. Although it was a short-term success de scandale, Parade was an enormous influence on the next generation of French composers, especially Les Six, which included Francis Poulenc and Darius Milhaud. In 1920, following the 1919 peace conference in Paris, an international group of composers issued a manifesto calling for a great international festival or congress of music at which every musical nation of the world may present its last and best contributions to the art, hoping to shake the hands of our brethren in art, irrespective of nationality and race, and to rebuild the broken spiritual bridges between the peoples. 2 years later, the International Society for Contemporary Music, the ISCM, was founded and still continues today with a large international festival every year. Its stated values are artistic diversity in musical creation, without prejudice or on differences in musical expressions, styles, genres, or media, nor regarding race, religion, or politics. The 1920s saw some interesting musical alliances between France and Germany. Milhaud conducted part of Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire in 1921, and Schoenberg programmed works by Debussy and Ravel on his Vienna concert series. But the spirit of cooperation was short-lived, as composers soon polarized around either Schoenberg or Stravinsky. The rapid pace of industrial, scientific, and technological change in the late 19th century impelled artists to search for new directions. The unprecedented shock and horror of the Great War led to widespread rejection of Romanticism in favor of hard-edged modernism, which we might interpret as a collective way to shield society from the trauma of the war. The variety of musical responses to the war was dramatic, and their repercussions are still very present today. Thank you.